This week, our castaway is the English film actress Charlotte Rampling. Charlotte, you've been to some glamorous locations for your movies. Have you ever been to a desert island?
I guess the nearest I've been to a desert island is Bora Bora in French Polynesia, which is still very undeveloped, and there are two small hotels there which are made out of just the reeds.
Yes.
The reeds for the roof. So I guess that's really the nearest I've been, and I was ideally happy there, but I did have company.
Yes. How could you take landliness?
I don't think I would find it as difficult as I really think it is.
What would you be happiest to have left behind in civilization?
The pressures, I think. Just the normal pressures of life, of people perhaps living much too closely together.
Is music important in your life?
Very important.
Do you play an instrument?
I played the piano. I studied the piano while I was a child until I was 15. Then, unfortunately, gave it up, as one often does in adolescence, gives up the things and regrets afterwards. I took it up later. I'm not good, but it gives me enormous pleasure playing.
Do you play discs a lot?
Records?
Yes.
Yes.
How did you set about choosing just eight?
I wanted to choose the kind of records that I could listen to, for a start, again and again, the kind of records that would be company, kind of records that would evoke memories in me of very beautiful things that I'd seen in the other part of the world that I was excluded from when I'm on the island.
What's your first one?
Beethoven, the Emperor Concerto, which was the first classical record that I listened to when I was young. My mother adored it, and we used to listen to it all the time.
Part of the second movement of Beethoven's Emperor Concerto, Vladimir Ashkenazy with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra conducted by Sir George Shelty. What's your second record?
The Beatles. I grew up in the 60s. I was beginning my film career when the Beatles were starting. In fact, they started, I think, a year before I did. And they've made such an impression on popular music, I think, more than anybody. Well, I know more than anybody. And the record that I choose here, this Sgt. Pepper album, I think is the best. I guess it's the poetry of youth, as far as I can see.
Which track shall we play?
A Day in the Life.
I read the news today, oh boy. 4,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire. And though the holes were rather small, them all. Now they know how many holes it takes to fill the album.
The Beatles. Charlotte, you spent most of your very early life moving about, didn't you?
Yes, I did. My father was in the army, so my homes were 2 years in different places all over Europe.
Mm. Your father was a very distinguished athlete.
Yes, he was. He has extraordinary legs and energy because he won a gold medal in Berlin in 1936.
Was it very unsettling going to a number of schools being shunted around Europe like that?
It was unsettling, really, because I couldn't keep friends very long because I would make friends and then have to leave them. They would remain in the same place.
How old were you when you eventually settled down, as it were, as a family in England?
My father retired when I was 14, so that was when we settled in England.
Did you have any ideas then on what you wanted to be?
I had vague ideas. I was attracted towards acting through amateur dramatics because I felt when I was on the stage that I was truly relating to people. I was perhaps rather introverted as a child. And this, to me, was a marvellous form of communication to people. It was like a distant communication, but I know I felt what I could do to people. I could make them laugh and happy and cry and enjoy me.
You worked in advertising for a while.
Yes, I did.
And then you took off and wandered in Spain.
Which I guess was in my nature, having wandered really as a child. And I also wanted to learn another language because I speak French fluently, because my father was at NATO in Fontainebleau.
Mm. And then you did some fashion modelling.
3 months of it. I wasn't very good.
And how did films come into it?
The Bolting brothers saw a picture in a magazine of me, and they were looking for a young girl to play the lead role in their film Rotten to the Core. And it was one of those miraculous lucky chances. I was launched into the film business.
Playing a big part
straight
away?
Playing the leading female role.
It's said that you left the cinema in tears when they showed you that film.
Yes, I did. I've never done it again, but I did then. It was, I guess, just the shock, the embarrassment of revealing myself to such an extent.
Mm.
Because, as I said before, I didn't like to reveal myself, but it was, I guess, the greatest challenge to me. I mean, yes. I just did the best I could, and it seemed to work.
Let's have your third record. What's that?
And the third record will be Tchaikovsky, The Sleeping Beauty. I've always loved ballet. I studied ballet as a child. And I could, I think, have happy times dancing around the desert island to the very beautiful music of Tchaikovsky.
An excerpt from Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty, Pierre Monteux conducting the London Symphony Orchestra. So, you started your film career quite near the top. What was the next step? What was your second picture?
Well, the next step after Rotten to the Core was a training at the Royal Court Theatre, because I felt almost guilty of having been chosen from amongst a lot of actresses who trained for a long time,
yes,
to do a lead part in a big film. So I thought that if I went to the Royal Court Theatre, where they had an improvised school, which it doesn't exist anymore, but they had this improvised school, I could perhaps learn a few things, like voice control or improvisation or just losing one's inhibitions. And while I was doing that, I did television plays, and the next step was getting the role of Georgie Girl with,
yes,
Lynn Redgrave.
And a very successful film. You had a very showy part.
Yes, she was, I guess, the first example of a truly liberated woman, to the extent that it made people very angry, because the character I played didn't want the baby that she had in the end. I mean, she was prepared just to give the baby away to her friend, because she wanted to lead her own independent life.
You got rather the image of the tough, hard girl. Was there a danger that you'd be typed that way?
There was, after Georgia Girl, an enormous one.
And it happen?
Yes. Oh, yes. People were terrified of me. In fact, I remember when I went on, the next film I did was The Long Duel, and when I went onto the set, people told me afterwards they were expecting, I don't know what, but some kind of
witch. Watch out for this one.
Yeah, she's going to be a real demon. And it wasn't until Visconti that people were shown another dimension of my personality, because I was the only good person in The Damned that he made.
Yes, Visconti's The Damned with Dirk Bogarde.
With Dirk Bogarde.
It was about that time, following a family tragedy, the death of your sister, you took a year off, a sabbatical year, to think things out.
Obviously, I was very close to my sister, and then my mother becoming very ill, and I felt perhaps that life was coming too easy, and I wanted to see how other people lived. I wanted to stop thinking about myself. I wanted to explore other thinkings, other philosophies.
And where did you wander to?
I wandered to Afghanistan and lived with the gypsies up in the hills near the Russian border, and I stayed there for about a month. And then I went to a monastery do not laugh, there were women there too.
Mm.
But it was a Tibetan monastery where the Tibetan monks had taken refuge when they could no longer remain in Tibet. And there I learnt meditation and just read a lot of books and just led a very quiet life for a year, you know, tranquil thought.
Did that year produce a lasting and permanent change in your personality?
Yes, because I think there are a lot of ways out of that particular situation through a psychiatrist or through tranquilizing drugs, sleeping pills, but I was determined, or drink, I was determined to do it myself without any assistance except my own self.
A year's a long time to be away for someone quite new to the business. Was there work waiting for you when you came back?
Yes.
What
it didn't stop. I mean, well, I went to America then to do a film called The Ski Bum, which wasn't an enormous success, but it got me out of England and got me into a change of scenery, and I love to ski.
Mm.
And it wasn't really until I married Brian that I felt secure enough to truly go right into the business and not be afraid anymore.
Yes. Brian Southcombe.
Brian Southcombe, my husband, and our son, Barnaby, who's three. So we all travel together and we have fun in the business rather than letting the business take over us.
Good. Let's have your fourth record. What's that?
My fourth record is the great Elvis Presley, who I listened to as from the age of 15. In fact, all my first boyfriends and my first parties had Elvis in the background. I think he's just fabulous.
You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please tell the phone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad for something I might have said, please don't forget my past. The future looks bright ahead. Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
The voice of Elvis. You made two costume pictures straight off, 'Tis Pity She's a Whore and The Six Wives of Henry VIII. Do you like working in costume?
I think my favourite period, in fact, is not quite so far back into history. I feel it's a little difficult to relate to those people, mainly in the way they lived, in the castles they lived, the kind of lives they lived, the kind of relationships they had with each other. I feel a bit encumbered by the costumes and by the sets. My favourite period, I think my best work has been done from, say, the 20s to the 40s.
You made a film in Rome which had a great impact, a very outspoken film. In fact, it was held up, it wasn't shown here for a while.
The Night Porter you're talking about?
Oh, yes, with Dirk Bogarde again.
That's right.
Now, that takes you into the period you were talking about. It flashes back to the war, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, when the character I play is 16, and then we meet up again with the two people, the Nazi officer and the girl who is now older, 10 years later. And the film, the subject matter, we all realised was going to be very deep and very difficult to do, but it's something that I believed so strongly in, as Dirk did, and the woman director.
Who was the woman director?
Liliana Cavani. It eventually came to England because some of the British critics, for instance, Dillis Powell and Margaret Hinksman, wrote so much about the power of this film that it must be seen, especially by young people who were born after the war, like myself, that it did eventually come here and was an enormous success. Obviously, some people loathe it, but a lot of people were very, very affected by it.
Recently, you've made a very successful picture in the United States with Robert Mitchum, Farewell, My Lovely. Did you feel that doing a remake of a very successful film of so long ago, of the 30s, was a kind of challenge?
Well, funnily enough, it wasn't such a successful film as people think, because a lot of people mistake it for The Big Sleep, which was Lauren Bacall and Bogarde's first film together. The challenge there, apart from it being a remake, yes, which is always difficult, because you never know whether it's going to be as good and people are going to say, oh, well, you know, she wasn't like so-and-so, was that I was playing an American, and most of the American actresses wanted to play that part.
Recently, you've been making a picture with Peter O'Toole we haven't seen yet. That's in the pipeline.
That's, yes, it's finished, the film, but has not been seen.
What's it called?
It's called Foxtrot, which again is my favourite period. It's 1939, just before the outbreak of the war.
There was a piece in the paper the other day that you're going to take another year off from films.
Well, it was really slightly misquoted, and all the papers seemed to catch on to it. What I, in fact, said, that it was physically impossible to work, say, after 6 months, because I don't think there are that many pregnant women parts. And I was working 5 weeks after Barnaby was born, yes. And working solidly, non-stop. And I think that I, you know, do deserve a little bit of time to get to know the next child.
Barnaby's going to have a brother or sister?
He doesn't want a baby, because babies are very boring. So he says.
Where's your base? Where's home?
We have a house in Saint-Tropez. That's the only house we own at the moment. We rent a house when we're working in Los Angeles.
So you can indulge in water skiing. That's your great hobby, isn't it?
Snow skiing really is my great hobby. But water skiing is...
A reasonable substitute.
A reasonable substitute.
Let's have your next record. What's that to be?
The opening title music of 2001 Space Odyssey. This film, I think, had an enormous impact on the young people and older people alike. A powerful, powerful film, and the music is as powerful as the visual.
The title music of the film 2001, Richard Strauss's Also sprach der Zarathustra. Record number 6, Nick, what's that?
This is a musical, Godspell, which originated in England and became an enormous success, and I adored it. It seemed that it had a fresh, new look at religion. It made Jesus Christ appear as one of us, a young man, a young, good man, who was trying to make other people feel the way he did. And I think the music is extraordinary.
Day by day, day by day, oh dear Lord, three things I pray: to see thee more clearly, love thee more dearly, follow thee more nearly. Day by day, day by day, day by day.
Julie Covington from the London cast of Godspell. Are you a practical person, Charlotte?
I could be.
You would be all right looking after yourself.
I would
a desert
be. I mean,
island.
When I say I could be, I'd rather not spend time on that. Mm. And in my business, I don't have much time to spend on it. But I, in fact, do enjoy doing it.
Yes.
I mean, looking after the house, looking after my children, but say we're talking about a desert island. Yes, I could cook for myself. I think I'm a survivor, so I don't think I'd have any problem.
Ever done anything
surviving.
Useful, like fishing or whatever?
Want to start, in fact. I was going to start this year. I would like to go scuba diving and swimming underwater.
Would you try to escape?
I guess if I saw a boat, I would, yes, signal, make as much noise as I could to attract their attention.
Yes, in other words, you'd try and get help, but would you try and help yourself? Would you try and make a raft?
No.
I think you're very wise. Let's have record number 7.
Record number 7 is Mozart, the Magic Flute, and this is special to me, not only because it's a very lovely piece of music, but in the Night Porter, which we mentioned before, we did a small version of this opera.
Fritz Wunderlicht as Tamino in Mozart's The Magic Flute. Which brings us now to your last discourse there.
This is somebody who is very recently come into the music business. His name is Eric Carmen, and I first heard him when I was in Los Angeles 2 months ago. And I feel he has a very strong talent. He has not only a beautiful voice, but the arrangements behind his music evoke a feeling of classical and pop, and I guess this is what I like most about pop music, if the two can be incorporated.
Eric Carmen singing All By Myself. If you could take just one disc out of the eight you've chosen, which would it be?
I would choose Beethoven, the Beethoven Emperor.
And one luxury to take to the island with you?
A luxury, I think, would be a painting.
Mm-hmm.
One of the very beautiful ballet pictures by Degas.
Right. And one book apart from the Bible, Shakespeare and big encyclopedias?
I think the book would be Dune by Frank Herbert. It's basically a science fiction book, but it takes man's mind and projects it in for a very, very far into the future. And I think on a desert island that would give me enormous ideas.
Dune by Frank Herbert. And thank you, Charlotte Rampling, for letting us hear your desert island discs.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everyone.